Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for July's Small Animal Practice Club webinar. I'm very pleased to introduce our speaker for today, EBVS and RCVS recognised specialist and veterinary dentistry, Simone Kirby. Thank you, Simone. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Yes, thank you for the introduction, and thanks everybody who's joining us for this webinar this today. And we're going to talk about feline stomatitis and its differentials. Stomatitis in cats is fairly prevalent in practice, with prevalence rates reported of between just under 1% and just under 4% of cats presenting to practice. And any age group, breed, or sex can be affected. But what do we really mean when we term that a cat has feline chronic gingivostomatitis? Often we use the acronym FCGS, which I will use a lot during this presentation because takes up less space on our slides. So, clinical symptoms of FCGS that your patient might present with, we have bright red, painful and persistent and extensive gingival and mucosal inflammation. The client might have noticed halitosis and pain of opening of the mouth for the cat. They might have observed that the cat is pawing at the mouth, perhaps not yawning as fully as it normally does because of the pain when it's opening the mouth. It might have problems eating, taking in the food, chewing it and swallowing, and with that reduce appetite. We might then, as a result of all of the above, see weight loss and depression in those patients, so they can be quite debilitating and can become quite serious. When we talk about FCGS cases, we should note that we characterize them also by an inflammation not only of any of the gingiva and oral mucosa, but that we want to expect to see caudal stomatitis as well. So those fields at the far back of the mouth where the teeth have already stopped and where maxilla meets mandible would also be inflamed and often show this characteristic cobblestone pattern of inflamed bumpy mucosa with varying degrees of proliferation and ulceration. We want to differentiate this from other localized stomatitis distributions, such as if we have only buccal or buccal stomatitis, or we only have a ulceration on the tongue, glossitis. So those we just term for the moment other stomatitis. Some of you might have come across the term fossitis, and that used to be very widely used in these cases, but should no longer be used. It's kind of a misnomer from the anatomical definition of the fosses being actually the space caudal to the isthmus of the oropharynx. So it is caudal to the oral cavity, and in that small path that leads to the pharynx that houses the tonsils and the end bit of the soft palate, etc. So it's really not that caudal mucosa that we're looking at that is inflamed in FCGS cases. Importantly now, how do I differentiate the FCGS cases from marked gingivitis cases? I need to have an understanding of an anatomical structure called the mucogingival junction. And in stomatitis cases, the inflammation will extend beyond the mucogingival junction into the alveolar and buccal mucosa. So it not just gingiva is affected, but tissue beyond the mucogingival junction. And I will just give you a tiny little anatomy refresher on this. So here is a cat with a relatively healthy gingiva and mucosa. It does not have stomatitis. And let's just see if I can use a pointer just to point out above the canine tooth, the gingiva extends quite high up actually. And in the anesthetized patient, you can appreciate that the gingiva is firmly attached. So the mucogingival junction then comes down sharply above the premolar teeth and then runs only 2 or 3 millimeters above the gum line of the premolar teeth in the maxilla, and quite similarly in the maybe a little bit wider in the mandible. So this is just something to be aware of. Where does the mucogingival junction normally reside? So when you look at the inflamed image of an inflamed stomatitis case, that you are confident to decide, is this actually stomatitis? Does the inflammation extend beyond just the gingiva? Let's just remove this little guy. So what causes feline chronic gingival stomatitis? It is a multifactorial disease, and certainly many microbial agents are involved, but it is not possible to determine with the current state of knowledge, it's not possible to determine a cause and effect relationship amongst any of those to the chronic stomatitis. Probably the one that has been most implicated is the feline caliche virus, because the association rate is very high, up to 100%. Of feline chronic gingival stomatitis cases testing positive for it. Maybe not precisely 100%, and again, it depends on which study you're looking at. And then there are other antimicrobial agents, which I haven't listed here on the slide. I've fitted out those with a question mark where the association is a little bit more questionable, since studies can be found where there is an association, and then other studies that say that there's the same prevalence rate in cats that do not have stomatitis. Yeah, it's certainly something we're keep an eye on further research coming out to try and find out, is there anything that can be done for better treatment for this condition. And we certainly know that there's an aberrant immune reaction to the plaque on the teeth, plaque being this biofilm that adheres to the tooth surface and that is teeming with millions and millions of bacteria that in mature plaque can form very intricate and quite pathogenic bacteria slime on the teeth. Some studies have found a predominant CD8 plus cytotoxic T lymphocyte response in patients with FCGS, and that is indicative of a response to intracellular pathogens. So it is one of those pieces of the puzzle that make us understand, the body is reacting strongly to possibly viruses, but possibly to bacteria as well. Then we know through clinical experience that presence of dental disease, such as periodontal disease, resorptive lesions, any root remnants that are problematic, and fractured teeth with endodontic disease would exacerbate stomatitis. And that is then also being obviously taken care of as we plan our treatment for this condition. So when you're presented with one of these cases in your clinic, you perform a complete physical examination, and it is often possible to make your diagnosis based on the clinical presentation of the case, because the inflammation in the mouth is dramatic, the pain is dramatic, and certainly the caudal stomatitis is very much diagnostic. However, it is recommendable to do quite a systematic workup, diagnostic workup on these cases. We do want a full biochemistry and hematology, and mostly to rule out other things going on with this patient. In terms of what we do see with the stomatitis cases is very, very frequently a hyperglobulinemia as an expression of the strong immune response. It is recommendable to run FELV-FIV testing. Quite a large study has shown that patients with stomatitis are at higher risk of testing seropositive for one of these retroviruses. It is also recommendable from the point of view of furthering our knowledge about the condition to take oral and conjunctival swabs for respiratory virus panel testing. In the financially difficult cases, one could argue that perhaps your treatment plan for the condition might not change according to the result. However, it's always really valuable information to have whether our patient is indeed feline caliche virus positive, or is it one of those that is actually herpes virus positive, or perhaps has both of those. It is certainly information that is generally of value. And important, though, for the patient individually is that if we do see an unusual, slightly abnormal or asymmetrical proliferative lesion in the mouth, then we do want to perform histopathology on that and take a biopsy. When you're first presented with the patient, with the cat with chronic gingival stomatitis, it's certainly a discussion point to let the client know that this is quite a serious condition. It can be quite frustrating. It can require extraction of all of the teeth or most of the teeth. In my experience, for most clients need a little time just to warm to that idea because most of them will balk at it initially, but then soon realize that this will be the way to go after some time. Initially, we obviously don't want to wait until procedure appointment, but right away start with analgesics. Antibiotics may be indicated as well, since we often get secondary opportunistic bacterial infection of the mucosa in the areas of ulcerated and proliferative inflammatory changes on the oral mucosa. It has been mentioned a lot in the literature, probably more in the older literature, to use corticosteroids as well in cases of feline chronic gingival stomatitis. But nowadays, we would recommend those mostly for short-term use, using them at anti-inflammatory doses with the goal to taper after a short dose, after a short course already, and probably mostly used as a rescue treatment to try and lift the cat out of a kind of a hole of anorexia and depression if they are severely affected by the condition and fail to respond positively to any of the usual analgesics and antibiotic courses that we would normally prescribe as a initial supportive therapy. Next, we would want to book this cat in for a full comprehensive dental examination under anesthesia and with a view to performing extractions, quite possibly multiple extractions and possibly full mouth extractions. But the goal, first of all, is that we perform this comprehensive health assessment that should include dental charting and dental radiography. We will be able to document the full extent of this stomatitis. That should be documented photographically and on your dental chart, as well as the notes, your clinical notes, so that there is good documentation. And all the teeth that are in contact with mucosal lesions should be extracted. We also need to identify teeth with dental pathology. So all diseased or fractured teeth and any root remnants that are problematic should be extracted. We should also take advantage while the cat is under anesthesia to inspect those areas of soft tissue in the mouth that are not really accessible to be looked at when the cat is awake, such as the caudoventral, caudolateral base of the tongue and the entrance to the oropharynx, to decide whether these areas are also affected, and extent of the stomatitis to those tissue areas would mean that we have to give an even slightly worse prognosis, a slightly more guarded position. And our extraction work, extracting all of the premolar, molar teeth, or sometimes even all the teeth, including canine and incisor teeth, the goal is to reduce the inflammatory stimuli and elimination of plaque-carrying surface of the tooth crowns. Here is an example of a radiograph that has diagnosed a retained root, and it's the mesial root of a mandibular molar tooth in a cat with FCGS. And we can kind of see it has been drilled into, so possibly a colleague had tried to extract the tooth before and left it in. However, in cats with feline chronic gingival stomatitis, it is not recommendable to leave in any root but those that undergo extensive root resorption of the type where the root turns literally into bone-like material. The type 2 resorptive lesion resorption is our one and only exception where we do leave root material behind. But here in this example, if you're able to kind of scroll into this slide and see it a little bit magnified, you will be able to make out that thin black line of the periodontal ligament space that goes all around this tooth root and indicates to us that this is really a root that should be extracted completely. It is not an ankylosed root that is being resorbed with a bone-like replacement resorption. So this root remnant was extracted in its entirety in this cat. With the photographic documentation, so it's a good idea to take photos with the mouth wide open and an assistant holding the kind of the skin and cheek tissue outwards towards laterally, so that this caudal stomatitis area is presenting itself to the camera. With the anesthetized patient, it's probably easiest to do those views just before you intubate, because once the endotracheal tube is in place, it's a little bit more tricky to get a good view with good lighting shining into the cat's mouth. And then after treatment, on post-operative assessments, some months down the line after treatment, I do often, as as much as possible, do photographic documentation as well, since it is good to have something to compare things to, especially if the inflammation appears to be clearing slowly. It is very good to be able to go back to previous photographs and compare. Actually, we do have some progress because you can see then on the photographs there's a little bit less inflammation, etc. In my example that I included in this slide here, we have complete remission in the post-op radiograph, and only the lighting. Of course, you have to take into account that the pink shades might vary a little bit in your photography according to the lighting of the room. On the right-hand side, our patient is in full remission after complete full mouth extraction. So when you make your extraction decisions, one thing is to plan in sufficient time and be aware that these extractions cannot be rushed. It would be unwise to try and rush full mouth extractions and leave many root remnants behind, because that is most likely not going to work very well, and the root remnants will be infected and inflamed, and the gingiva will not heal over them, and it could actually make the condition worse. So we should take our time and do thorough, meticulous extractions, and it is certainly a consideration that depending on the speed of the clinician and also depending much on the patient factors, how well seated are these roots, how easily would they fragment, to consider whether to do staged extractions, to do one side first, let it heal, have the other side just scaled and polished as an initial improvement, while the cat is awaiting to come back for the second side to be extracted 6 or weeks later. And in some cases, you may need to focus on the diseased teeth and those that are contacting the mucositis. And in, as p for instance, in the example of this image of this cat here, had gingivitis only around its canine and incisor teeth, and stomatitis lesions around the premolar and molar teeth. So, in the interest of staging the procedure, it was decided to extract only the premolar and molar teeth in this case. And we waited to see if the canine incisor area might improve, which it didn't in this cat, so it had it extracted at a second sitting. Second stage was the canine and incisor extractions. Now, once we have extracted all of the teeth, our job is not done yet, and we need to follow up these cases carefully. We want to see how do things heal once the suture material has dissolved and disappeared. Obviously, that depends on the suture material, but one of the commonly used ones, the Monocryl polyglipcaprone, it actually sticks around, its remnants stick around in the mouth between 4 and 6 weeks post surgery. So apart from your standard 1 or 2 week post-extraction, post-operative check, you do want to get the patient back after 6 or 8 weeks and follow them up closely to see what further requirements do they have. So it is already considered quite an improvement, a significant improvement and success, if a lot of the painful symptoms and anorexia, dysorexia symptoms are improving a lot, and if we only need perhaps the occasional course of a non-steroidal like meloxicam and an occasional course of antibiotics after the completion of full mouth extractions or premolar molar tooth extractions. And in nearly 80%, that is the case, that we do not need further, more intensive medical treatments, and only some supportive therapy, and eventually the patient is in remission and might not require any further medication. So those are quite encouraging results. We get those from a few studies that looked into the effects of surgical therapy in FCGS cases. However, we have that 20% of patients where we do not see significant improvement and we require further therapies. These may be termed refractory cases, although it is arguable whether we should call them that. If they then respond to further therapies, they will again be successful, but only with additional treatments, whereas a very, very small percentage might end up sadly being refractory to about everything. So if we have a refractory case that did not respond sufficiently to just our surgical therapy of the full mouth extractions, I'll just use full mouth extractions for simplicity interchangeably with whether we've extracted the canine teeth or not. But it means we've at least extracted all of the premolar and molar teeth. So one of our options could be interferon therapy. So the recombinant feline interferon omega, which is has got a license. We're sending this webinar here out of the UK, so I'm aware that we have a UK license for such a product for certain treatments of certain feline viruses. However, when we use it for the treatment of chronic gingival stomatitis, that constitutes an off-label use of this product, and we just need to ensure that we have made the client aware that it is an off-label use. So the recombinant feline interferon omega is antiviral, antiproliferative, anti-inflammatory, and immune modulatory. I would certainly consider its use only after completion of the extractions. And anecdotally from my own clinical experience, I just have come across many cases where it was tried prior to extractions, but then not successful. So, of course, I might get sent only the cases where it was not successful. So it would be interesting to see if those colleagues ever actually do have successes. But a lot of cats that get sent to me had been on some form of interferon therapy before the extractions, and it just made no difference at that time, whereas if we use it after completion of extractions, it has much more of a chance because we've already removed that factor of immune stimulation through the plaque on the tooth surfaces. And not to talk about any dental disease that might have been a really strong inflammatory stimulus in this oral cavity. I have written down the doses on the slide for you. I'm not going to read out all of this, but just to be aware that we do have scientific evidence for a good chance of improvement with the oral topical mucosal application method, where we apply the small amount of this diluted interferon product to the mouth of the cat for approximately 3 months. One of the things that some clients find challenging is they have to trickle it into the mouth, gently holding the cat's mouth closed for 30 to 60 seconds, as we don't really want the cat to spit it out. We don't really want it to swallow it either. as it gets inactivated in the stomach. Obviously, we all know our cats are not always the most cooperative for this kind of thing, but hopefully, many cats would be amenable to realizing that this is not a threatening thing to have done and that they are sufficiently cooperative for this kind of application. Then, of course, there's the option as well of the subcutaneous injections of courses of 5 injections every other day, and then often repeated within 3 to 6 weeks as required. And intralesional or sublesional injections are also used by some authors. Then our other option for refractory cases would be the use of cyclosporine. Again, talking about the UK market, where we have a cyclosporine liquid on the market, but that is licensed for the use in atopic skin disease. So the use in feline chronic gingival stomatitis would be an off-label use. But it can be used. It is not suitable for cats that are on a raw meat diet because of an increased risk of catching some bacteria or other antimicrobial or parasitical condition from the diet. And likewise, it is not recommendable to let a hunting cat continue to hunt and eat its prey. That might require some lifestyle changes, such as keeping the cat indoors or fitting it with 1 or 2 bells on the collar to make its hunting attempts unsuccessful. Once with cyclosporine therapy, if it is successful, once the patient is in remission, we would taper the dose gradually by increasing the dosing intervals. So the dose itself stays the same, but we give it less and less frequently. Then the option of the corticosteroid, or specifically prednisolone, is probably the first choice for the ease of tailoring the dose according to the needs of the patient and its short-acting effects. But it should be seen as a last resort treatment, not as the medication that we grab as soon as we see our stomatitis cat. But it can be helpful if a cat just simply does not respond to meloxicam or other non-steroidal medication and antibiotic injections and becomes severely anorexic, then it can sometimes serve as a rescue medication. But of course, we are aware that there are adverse effects. So if we were to rely on it as a long-term strategy and for long-term use, we have to inform the client about the risk of adverse effects and conditions that can develop in cats if they are long-term on prednisolone. And also inform them about the likelihood that the effectiveness will be diminishing with time, and the cat may require higher and higher doses of this in order for it to still work until perhaps one day it might not work anymore. There are always new treatment modalities being tried, and if you go back and do a literature review, there are some interesting medications, gold salts, and all kinds of things that have been tried in the past. One of the more promising ones of late is the use of mesenchymal stem cell therapy. And in this study population of this small study carried out at UC Davis, it was autologous adipose tissue-derived mesenchymal stem cells that were given intravenously to this cohort of cats with stomatitis, so it's small numbers, so it's more like a pilot study, but with the promising results that 5 out of the 7 showed either complete remission or substantial improvement of their condition. So this is something to keep an eye out once further studies about stem cell therapy use in feline chronic gingival stomatitis are being published, hopefully. Now, one big important pivotal point in control of chronic gingival stomatitis is control and reduction or removal even of plaque. So this is what we all do every day when we do our toothbrushing every morning and evening and flossing. We remove plaque from our teeth, and if we didn't, then our friends and family would probably soon let us know that something is wrong with our teeth because of the smells, and it doesn't look nice either. So it's logical. It would be perfect to brush the cat's teeth really thoroughly every day. However, sadly, the reality is that because of the oral pain and perhaps also the usual obstacle that we have with cats having a kind of their own idea about being cooperative about things like that, that it is not easy to implement. So it's more like an ideal that we should try and strive towards and see with every individual patient what can be done to reduce the plaque in his cat's mouth. So the normal healthy cat that is perhaps also an active hunter if it has outdoors access, or even for indoor cats if it's active with toys, playing around, eating crunchy biscuits, cat food, there is a natural self-cleansing of the teeth. But if it is severely painful already, it will try to chew its food as little as possible and just more or less swallow the food whole or wait for their carers to offer them soft food or wet food. And because of pain, you then reduce the natural cleansing of the mouth is further reduced. One type of plaque reduction action that we can offer to the majority of cats with chronic gingival stomatitis is to offer them a water additive. And I would ideally go and choose one with proven efficacy for plaque reduction that bears the VOHC seal of approval to show that actually it does deliver what it says on the label, which is a significant plaque reduction. And that is something that we probably should offer, but making it clear this is just only part of a multi-focal strategy, and it's not going to be expected that the water additive itself is going to clear the condition. It just plays its role as best as possible whilst we are most likely unable to brush this cat's teeth. Now, at the beginning of this talk, I mentioned that I wanted to differentiate feline chronic gingival stomatitis from other stomatitis types. And So we don't want to do this just for the sake of splitting hairs or so, just to try and standardize our terminology to make more sense of the types of feline stomatitis that we see. So sometimes you might come across a case of buccostomatitis, where you can clearly see that your stomatitis, let me get the little drawing arrow out, your stomatitis goes beyond the mucogingival junction. So we've got our mucogingival junction here. Whoops, the little arrow was gonna jump, sorry, the jump was unintentional. So you got your mucogingival junction there. But the stomatitis goes beyond, just lift it up to the mucosa beyond. It goes into the mucosa beyond the mucogingival junction. So not only gingiva is affected, we haven't got a case of gingivitis, but it is a stomatitis above this upper fourth premolar tooth. However, in this cat, we did not have a caudal stomatitis. So it was localized just in the buccal mucosa above the upper fourth premolar teeth. And when we examined this particular cat closely, we actually discovered that its third premolar tooth, and let me move the arrow, its third premolar tooth presented with a crown fracture. A little bit unusual in a cat, but it can happen in a young, adventurous cat. This most likely was the inflammatory stimulus. The endodontic disease resulting from this fracture was likely the inflammatory stimulus that caused this stomatitis. So this needed to be extracted, and the fourth premolar with the adjacent stomatitis needed to be extracted. Likewise, on the contralateral side, similarly, but it did not need all of its teeth extracting. So for this reason, it's important to make this differentiation of the buccostomatitis versus a fully blown chronic gingival stomatitis that includes the caudal mucosa being inflamed as well. Because in these slightly minor stomatitis cases, we have a more favorable prognosis. We might not need to be quite so aggressive in our extraction decisions and have more a case of selective extractions. Some would argue that potentially these more localized stomatitis cases might constitute a different disease compared to feline chronic gingival stomatitis. I wanted to bring to your attention as well that not everything that's bright red in the mouth and kind of jumping out at you as soon as you open the cat's mouth in the consulting room is always a stomatitis, and obviously could represent a different type of condition. And so I hope I'm giving you the tools to confidently make this distinction next time you see those cases where the diagnosis of stomatitis and chronic gingival stomatitis does not apply. So in this photograph here, we have a young individual and it has generalized gingivitis. So all of its teeth, and you can see very easily where the gingiva ends, because literally all of the gingiva, including the attached gingiva, is affected. You might see this at 6 months of age, 6 to 7 months of age, as the physiological eruption gingivitis, which should resolve spontaneously within a few weeks of the change of dentition. But sometimes the dentition change is already a thing of the past, and this cat is older than 8 months, and it still hasn't resolved its generalized gingivitis, which is when we start to talk about persistent juvenile gingivitis. This, in some cases, might go along with gingival hyperplasia as well, which makes the area look even more impressive with a red, bright red tissue, i.e. the gingival hyperplasia, overgrowing some of the premolar teeth and sometimes in the mandible, growing proliferatively along the mandibular molar and fourth premolar tooth as well. So those cases may resolve spontaneously after months or years. They have not been very well defined yet, so there's probably still more questions than answers we have about those types of cases. But what we do know is they are not stomatitis, because the inflammation does not go beyond the mucogingival junction. Typically and clinically importantly, they tend to not be painful. So even if the gingiva bleeds easily and is bright red, in the majority of cases, these are not painful conditions. Logically, it is not indicated to do full mouth extractions on these cases. And gingival inflammation, gingival overgrowth can eventually lead to periodontal disease. And for us to make treatment decisions to extract selectively those teeth that are affected by periodontal disease, you might need to anesthetize these patients at when they're older than a year of age, perhaps a year and a half and older, to perform a comprehensive dental examination on these patients and check and see if any of those teeth need to be extracted if periodontal disease had developed. Then you might come across cases where very focally, with variable size, in my photo here it's quite a small little blip, but sometimes it's size 3, 4, 6 times that size, of a proliferative lesion that occurs where the maxillary fourth premolar crown tip bites and impinges into the mucosa of the mandible. So this seems to be a bit of a conformational problem, especially in some breed cats, such as the British Shorthair types, although occasionally you will see it in a domestic Shorthair or Moggy cat as well. It can shift from the right side to the left side and vice versa, So it is a good idea to make precise notes about whether you've seen it on the right or on the left on your documentation, as it is well possible that a few weeks down the line the cat might come back having healed on one side and having the lesion now on the other side. In my experience, usually what goes along with this condition is a conformational, likely genetic thickening of the mandible at that point, so that the buccal mucosa kind of presents itself much more closely to the crown tip of the upper fourth premolar than it would do in a cat with a more slimline mandible. So we have quite a focal problem. Can be uncomfortable for the cat, of course, having the upper tooth bite into the tissue all the time, and then it's inflamed and the inflammation gets kept alive through repeated trauma, repeated impingement whenever it closes its mouth. And the treatment options then are very focally oriented about the treatment of those teeth that are involved, which means that the upper fourth premolar tooth might need to have a crown reduction, which can be done in a manner of different ways, either non-invasively without invading the pulp tissue, but in some cases endodontic treatment could be necessary, or actually the extraction of the upper fourth premolar so that it can no longer bite into the bottom tissue. It is not so infrequent that at the time that I anesthetize these patients to deal with the upper fourth premolar, that at that time periodontal disease has already developed on the adjacent mandibular molar tooth, because it is being compromised by the inflammation and the stimulation of this bite trauma right next to it. So it often needs to be extracted because it has this secondary periodontal disease developed. Here's the example of a case that had generalized proliferative feline chronic gingival stomatitis. So it certainly had that, but sadly it did not have only that. It also had squamous cell carcinoma. And it was actually in this case quite a challenge to become aware of that, because the feline chronic gingival stomatitis can create very proliferative inflammatory tissue, both on the mandible and in the caudal mucosa towards the entrance to the oropharynx. All of those tissues can be very proliferative, but through the palpation of the tissues externally, through the skin and face, close inspection of all of the tissues before going ahead with your extraction surgeries to decide whether you're happy that all of these tissues look rather symmetrical and that nothing jumps out at you as being different. So in this case, we had these tissues that seemed to mask a little bit like a proliferative tissue, but it was firmer and went further, extended further into the buccal tissues. And so we took a biopsy of this and it came back as squamous cell carcinoma. Certainly, if you do see inflammation only on one side of the mouth, then that's always an indication to take a biopsy there. But this would be an example where you had the classical distribution generalized all through the mouth, yet one of those lesions was different and warranted biopsy. So to summarize, the feline chronic gingival stomatitis that no doubt you will be presented with probably with two, three handful of cases or more per year. It will require extraction of all of the teeth or of the premolar and molar teeth if we are sure that it is definitely FCGS we have diagnosed and if we have ruled out the differentials. If we consider medical therapies, so further therapies such as perhaps interferon or cyclosporine therapy, then we should consider those after completion of the extractions, because there currently aren't enough studies or publications or indications that using them before extractions would be promising. The surgical therapy in literature still has, with the current data we have, still has the best result, with 80% either going into remission after extractions, or showing significant improvement. So that is at the moment still our mainstay of treatment of the feline chronic gingival stomatitis. Okay, so this concludes my talk. Thank you very much for your attention. And are there any questions? Okay, so I've got one question here, and let me just see if I can bring it all up. So the question is, would it be an option to give long-term non-steroidals as a treatment? And would, for instance, a low dose of every other day non-steroidal therapy manage to keep inflammation under control? So, in my experience, the non-steroidals play an important part in the treatment of the feline chronic gingival stomatitis, but it's more a supportive treatment. So something that helps to keep my patient happier while it's waiting for its appointment for the full mouth extractions. Or if I stage the full mouth extractions, it helps it in between the two extraction lots, and I might then use it for a few more weeks after the extractions are complete, and then trial it without the non-steroidal to see if it starts to be moving into remission with its pain symptoms, so that it might no longer need these non-steroidals. If you do use them long term, either because the surgical therapy alone was not sufficiently successful and it's still in some pain, or because, let's say, maybe we're talking about financially problematic case where perhaps a client struggles to afford the full mouth extractions, and we're going for long-term non-steroidal use. Yes, of course, you would normally try to go for the lowest effective dose. However, when stomatitis is painful, it is quite a constant and strong pain that would probably require the higher end of the dosing range of the non-steroidal for most cats, saying that not every cat is the same. You will get some exceptions to the rule. I hope that has answered that. We have another question. What about vaccinating cats with feline chronic gingival stomatitis? Can vaccinating them or giving a booster deteriorate the condition? So the answer to that is that probably want to be careful with live vaccines. The strong stimulus they could get from live vaccines, if a case is under control, say it has been treated successfully and is in remission, then it should be okay to keep on vaccinating this cat. But if it is still in a fully blown feline chronic gingival stomatitis, I might be a little bit careful with that because I don't want to really stimulate the immune system, which is already overreacting, any further, if possible, and perhaps hold off until after treatments have been completed. Do we have any other questions?
think that's all the questions today, Simon. So, on behalf of Webinar Club, we'd like to thank you for an excellent presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.